Hello and welcome everybody to Around the Battleground. My name is LHS and I'm your host as always. Join me for his second appearance is my co-host, Mr. Culture. How you doing?
Sup, peoples? Glad to be back.
We didn't kick him off the show. He did pretty well, so we're good. We don't have to worry about that. You know, it was touch and go there for a moment, but we're all good now. You feel like you watched the SPL and everything a little bit differently this week after having been on the show?
Yeah. I mean, before when I watched, because I cast it, it was more trying to listen to what the casters were saying and still trying to absorb a little bit of like game information and sort of like get casting style and stuff. And then everything else you kind of learn from watching and playing. But now I'm sitting here like, what's the draft look like? Ooh, those rotations. Oh, that's not, you know, it's just more analytical for sure. More analytical when watching. Like today, I was weirded out, I'll say, by Renegades and some of the stuff that they did in their picks and bans and drafts. And Luminosity, I just felt really, really bad. That's all I could do was just feel really bad for him.
Yeah, I kind of found the same thing when I first started watching. I watched the SPL for like entertainment value. And then the more I did the show, the more that I was like, okay, I've got to actually pay attention and watch this. What am I seeing? What patterns are I seeing? And then, so everybody kind of goes through this, like, the phases of the game, right? Where you're really enjoying the game, you're having fun, and then you're also enjoying the pro league and everything. And then the game stops being as fun, and you stop having as good a time playing. And that's where, like, a lot of people, like, fall off the bandwagon, right? But then, like, honestly, what brought me back into the game and got me like rehyped and energized with Smite was coaching, analytics, doing the show, being able to talk to players, everything like that, like having that other dimension of everything. So even if I wasn't playing the game as much, I was still around the game, watching and analyzing and everything. So that's what really brought me in. So you're still fresh faced. You haven't been spurned. You haven't been burnt by the Smite meta.
Wait, listen, I got some mileage on me from League of Legends. Like when I heard the rumors of tank meta in Smite, I almost blew a fuse when the season first started, because tank meta in League was terrible. And honestly, esports is what takes you to the next level, because there are the people that are casuals. They hit one bad patch where all of a sudden the game's not fun for them anymore, and they just like abandon ship. It's like, well, I'll just go back and do whatever. It's whatever. It's Smite. It wasn't my game after all, but esports, it keeps coming back, because you come back for more than just playing the game. You're watching the game. You want to see what the pros are up to. You end up watching the pro streams, AMAs, and stuff like that, because you're an invested fan, like a traditional sports team, like if I was watching the Braves or the Hawks or something like that.
Yeah. Shout out to the GOAT. What's his name? Martin Anderson, Mountain Goat. For bringing back the Smite Pro subreddit and getting those AMAs every week and everything now. Those have been really fun to stop into. I've commented on like a couple, but mostly I've just been lurking. But like, it feels good to like start getting that pro-focused community back going. We've got the Smite Pro Discord channel that I pop into every now and then when Mixer Chat just gets too much to bear. I go in the watch channel for there, but big shout outs to him for like really sticking with it and bringing. It feels like there was like this dearth of like pro focused stuff for a while, and it feels like we're kind of swinging back into the pro scene being a lot more of the focus and the push and everything, and that's really good. Obviously we here and around the battleground like that, and as for the content creators, it's always good to see that stuff being pushed. So really happy to see that progression unfold. But that's enough just the introing of the show. We've got a good deal to talk about today. We'll quickly go over the SML. I don't think we need to really go into anything too much in depth. I think we have the standings graphics right here. If I can throw that to my producer, we'll see what he brings up. Does he have it? Women on the spot. Hey, there we go. So that's our European standings. We got Simplicity up at the top, finally dethroning Flashpoint. Then we got Out Cold, and at the bottom, Team Queso. Not a whole lot of surprises here. The biggest one kind of being Simplicity finding their stride late in the season and overtaking Flashpoint to top the charts. But, you know, nothing too major here. Out Cold still struggling to really find what they're doing. They brought in Breeze. What have you thought about Breeze so far this season?
Not the answer they're looking for. Not too impressive. I mean, given the circumstances, how much could you really expect from the Guardian role really to impact? But I mean, it's one of those things where first half of the season, you're being brought in to solve a problem. You need some time. So, and they'll have it, you know, they'll be watching from home, and yep. For MSI, they'll have some extra practice time and they'll be able to figure things out, hopefully. So I'm not going to throw too much on him yet. Now in the second phase of the year, if things don't start to improve, it's like you were brought in to solve issue X. You are not solving issue X. So now what are we going to do with you? Do we keep going? Do we make another roster swap? How do you fix the team next will be the question.
It's all how much do you realistically expect him to do is a very good point. I mean, coming in from Heroes of the Storm, he's relatively new to Smite itself. He's had some decent showing. He's not performing terribly, right? And I think that's pretty important. As he gets more acclimated to Smite esports and the scene and everything like that, I think he could do very well. There's a lot of pressure on this Out Cold squad, right? I think a lot of the problems that were plaguing them before he joined are still kind of there. And I think that's more indicative of things outside of that support role. I think I will really look at what you're getting out of ADC and jungle. Frostyak has been a really good jungle, but he's also pretty inconsistent. He's had his moments in the sun, but I think that as long as you have him on that roster, there's a pretty low ceiling of what you're going to be able to hit. And that's just my personal take after like seeing him this first half. It sucks to put him as like the scapegoat, but that's really who I'm looking at right now. But just as easily, you know, we could, you know, look at Spudio or Streak Up. I forget which one.
Yeah.
Spudio
is there. Yeah.
Spudio. So yeah, you know, the minor league is definitely it's its own thing right now, and it's difficult to really find your footing and put together the best roster forward. But you know, Out Cold, you pretty prime. You definitely want to see succeed. Demi, you want to see succeed. But is this the squad that they're going to be able to do that with? I don't know. I hate to see these guys not succeed, but it doesn't look like they're going to find a lot of success unless they change something drastically. TKSO has just been, ever since Alpha Jackal left, they've been kind of in a free fall and doing some weird jank stuff, and we don't really know what they're doing. They're looking more lost than I've seen them in a while, and I don't know what their fix really is either. I don't know. You can't fault the quality of players because they are good players. They've been in places before, but you know, what's it going to take to push them into the next level? You look at Flashpoint, they've been like their counterpoint for forever, and Flashpoint's figured it out. They put it together. What's Queso got to do the same?
Probably find another coach. When you have the coach leave and the team falls apart, usually means that the collective heads in that team from the players aren't strong enough, I would say, in formulating strategy and a plan for taking out teams, where they might not be doing the advanced scouting. Usually it will be the coach or the analyst that will do the scouting ahead, looking at what they've been, other teams been playing, builds, things like that. And so if the players aren't doing that research and they're going in blind every game, and on top of that, they don't have the ability to formulate strong strategies, then despite however strong the names you have, unless you're like the Pittsburgh Knights, things like this will happen where it just seems to fall apart and you don't know why, because none of the players on this team the names, as you said, are they're all strong. You know, there mm-hmm. shouldn't be a reason from performance standpoint for them to be faltering. So that's when you got to think it's more of a a head thing where it comes from the strategy. Trying to like transcending. Been watching too many Johnny Depp movies, I guess. I don't know.
All right. So I think you're right. Like, definitely need a coach in there. I think we're at the point where if you want to be a competitive team in Smite, you got to have a coach. And, you know, we see that mimicked in the pro league, and it's starting to be a thing in the minor league. It's just hard to do a coach because, you know, less pay. So what kind of coach are you going to get? And then them also being Spanish players, that kind of, you know, further hinders, you know, their search for coach. Obviously, the biggest one that I would think of, you know, they had Alpha Jackal who was helping. Obviously, there's some, you know, there's the English there, right? But, mm-hmm. you know, Spanish speaking native person, KS Air, you know, kind of left the scene and went to coach Trifecta. So, you know, the one guy who I would say, you know, this could be a good fit is already off into bigger and better things. So who knows what's going to happen with them? I want them to kind of rebound from this. I think they can. EU SML has been an interesting ride this year. So I don't expect it to, you know, falter in the second phase. Moving across the pond, we've got NA. Surprise, surprise. Armada still at top. We've kind of had this breakdown for a while now. Armada, Sanguine, Cryptic, Space Station, Gold. That has been the order of teams for a few weeks now. At the start of the season, we were curious if it was going to be Sanguine or Cryptic who won out. Our answer is Sanguine. The LATAMs coming into the minor league for the first time. Seen a lot of good stuff out of them. Honestly, probably should have gotten a 2-0 over Armada. Unfortunate for them that their Soul Inner Yarkor DC'd and wasn't able to come back. They held on pretty admirably with him gone. You can only imagine what would have happened if he stayed in the game. I think that's a pretty big game, monumentous. And then especially that they lost this one too, though. That's actually fairly important as well, because they couldn't rebound after that. They weren't able to put it together at the end. You could see there was just a little bit of life kind of taken out of them, wind out of their sails, if you would. What do you gather from the Sanguine squad after this loss?
I honestly think that they're, despite the loss, in pretty high spirits. I actually had a interaction with the Sanguine Twitter where they were saying that basically they're looking forward to getting revenge at MSI, because if Yarkor doesn't DC, they were playing to exactly their strengths between Yarkor and Panatom, controlling, literally just dominating Armada's blue buff, taking advantage of Mask being new, and therefore there being some synergy issues with Armada, and with Nexroid and Shinto pretty much playing safe enough in lanes where there was nothing for Armada to take advantage of. Game one, they ran it up pretty dominantly. Game two, again, dominant, and even to the end of the game, if it hadn't been 4v5, it was that gold lead slowly starting to shrink as Armada was like, okay, we're 4v5. We can just take whatever we want at this point. And the gold lead slowly went away. But it took them forever because it was so huge that Sanguine could easily defend base. Although I think the game went 50, 40 minutes, something like that. And then, like you said, game three, by that time, it just felt like Sanguine, they tried, but they just weren't really in it at that point. It was just like, well, chalk it up. Should have won already. It's that annoying feeling of we should have been out of this by now. Like, I can't believe we're still playing. We should have been out of this by now. And it just, they couldn't overcome that. But I think going into MSI, they clinched their spot. They know they can take out Armada if they have a full five that won't DC. I believe MSI is all going to be on land, correct? So there won't be that happening. So I think they're going in thinking, yes, we can, if we meet them again, beat them. And saying that means they can probably contend with some of these, again, lower in SPL teams. And this was a Sanguine that actually didn't make as many mistakes as we're prone to seeing them make. They weren't too over aggressive. They got in and got out, did what they needed to do. It wasn't being greedy around the map. And that's what got them the lead. It was just sad to see them not be able to pull through for the 2-0 sweep.
Yeah, I think what we saw today is that the gap between Armada and Sanguine isn't as big as it was to start the year. At the start of the year, it was very clearly Armada is the best team in, you know, the NA minor league, arguably the entire minor league. And then, you know, you had Cryptic and Sanguine kind of a ways behind fighting each other. And then, you know, SSG Gold at the bottom. Way at the bottom. and then as the split's gone on, you've had SSG A at the bottom. They, you know, they haven't improved in the same leaps that the other teams have. I think as much SSG has improved more and Cryptic has kind of calmed down as the season goes, but the growth and the progress of Sanguine has been immense. You know, these guys I know personally have been on the grind, streaming almost every day, multiple times a day. These guys are on the grind, getting better, playing everybody and anybody, getting their styles down, figuring out how to play against other teams. These guys have been grinding, I guarantee you, more than Armada has, and they've closed the gap. The more that these guys play, the better they're going to get. They have a lot of potential. I'm really excited to see them get to this midseason invitational and play against some of these better teams. I hope and I believe the format for a midseason is going to allow this. We're going to see them play more than one game. You know, that was the biggest thing in the past has been these, you know, whether it was, you know, international regions or these minor league teams, they'd get out, they'd play one game against the top seeded team and get, you know, run out the building. Now we have more opportunity for our winner's bracket, loser bracket, and we get to see them play more than once potentially. And that's always going to produce better results. We're going to see them get more time on the battlefield against better competition. And I think that's only going to make Sanguine better. If I was going to make a hot prediction, a hot, hot take.
Oh, boy.
Would say by Worlds, Sanguine would be number one SML NA. Just based on their growth.
I think that might be a little bit of a cop. I don't think that's such a hot take because they've shown they can do it already. They've shown that that's not a hot take. A hot take would be saying like Team Cryptic by World will be the best SML team and be number one seed.
A lukewarm take here. Only on Around the Battle Round you get these mild, medium flavored takes.
Not enough seasoning. Chicken's dry. Oh, man. I think the format for MSI will definitely help them, especially since round robin one-offs help so many teams that are seen as the underdogs in whatever situation they come into, because you know they can take games off of Armada. And now it's a bunch of one-off. We meet you one time, then maybe sometime later we'll meet you. I believe it's a round robin. And so basically they have a chance. I think in best of ones and multiple best of ones, they can definitely beat Armada. Most round robins, I have to relook up the format. Most round robins go at least three games between each team. So you play a total of six and three games against Armada. I think they could go 2-1, if not 3-0. At least 2-1 in that best of one, best of three, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I don't exactly disagree here. I'm excited to see. I want to see these LATAMs get the chance to succeed and then succeed. So definitely be rooting for those guys that move forward. Now that's it for the SML. We'll take our eyes to the big boy league, the Smite Pro League. We had some interesting games this week. First game of the week was Pittsburgh Knights versus Luminosity. Pittsburgh, I think before this, had some time off. They get to ease back into the Pro League by playing Luminosity, who has struggled. Luminosity making changes to the roster a little bit, swapping Joshi and Oceans. So Oceans is no longer mid. He's in the ADC role. and Jossi, no longer ADC, in the mid-roll. Trying to change it up, figure out something that works. And it didn't work. They get 3-0'd by the Pittsburgh Knights. However, game one goes 30 minutes long. And then game two, 24. Game three, 25. Pittsburgh get the 3-0 here. But to me, and I have openly said this across several platforms now, is that I potentially have some unrealistic expectations of the Pittsburgh Knights. I have not been satisfied with any of their games so far. I haven't been impressed. This set, again, felt sloppy. It felt like if you're going to play Luminosity, you need to win harder. And I don't know. Nothing felt as easy as it should have been. Even though the games are only 24 minutes long, 25 minutes long, it didn't feel as convincing as it should have. Like Luminosity still had a chance to a certain point and then was stopped. And if I'm, you know, Pittsburgh Knights, I want to see no chance from Luminosity. I don't know. Am I crazy, or do you see what I'm getting at?
I think maybe game one, yes. I think game one, they did exactly what they needed to. They got to Mollusk early. I believe they first blooded him extremely early in the game because they knew, hey, Mollusk is who they played through in the early game. Let's shut him down. When we shut him down, we basically shut down any chance that they have. And after that, though, I don't know. I feel like games two and game three, it was pretty precise and succinct. They took advantage of Josh on the Poseidon, who did not look good either game one or game two. And honestly, the only person that looked good on Luminosity was Oceans back in that Hunter role. Other than him, I mean, Mollusk did what he could. We all know this kid is great, and he has a bright future in the SPL. But besides him trying to do his damnedest to keep them in the game, and Oceans playing, I'll say decent, his best game was the game two where he was on the Soul. It felt like Pittsburgh just kind of rickrolled them. They might have taken their foot off the gas a little bit, but after game one where they were like, hey, we played that a little bit sloppy, we gave them a chance to stay in it for a little bit too long, they put their foot back on the gas, reapplied it, and they said, let's just go ahead and finish this 3-0. And Luminosity really didn't have a shot beyond game one. It just seemed like they were figured out. They were too uncoordinated in what they want to do. And once again, if their early game doesn't work, then Luminosity is fucked, basically. Pardon my language. Yeah. If their early game doesn't work, then they just don't know what to do after that.
Yeah, I don't know what Luminosity needs to do differently at this point. You look at the roster, and Mollusk has shown promise. Yeah. Joshy and Oceans have shown moments. They've been all right. It really, to me, the two veterans on the squad who are not delivering as much as they could be. And it's hard to say that as well, because I love Kiki, and Kiki has had good moments, but he's also just died a lot, been out of position, not been able to make the plays that he needs to do. And that's caused a lot of losses. That's caused them to be able to just kill Kiki. And when you kill the support, it makes it easier to then, you know, get a kill and then get a double kill, right? There's a lot of every kill you're getting Kiki, and you're not just getting Kiki and then, you know, Luminosity finding a kill there. That is their early game. But then Kiki's getting traded out too much. He's too far behind. And then he just becomes an afterthought. And that's problematic. Then I look at the supports from the minor league or the combine. And who do you add into support? I look at the landscape and I don't think there's really anybody that they could get. I don't think there's a single other support in NA that they could get to replace Kiki that would be an outright upgrade top to bottom. The only support player who I would think could replace him right now would probably be Genetics over in EUSML. But then you got to deal with Visas. And I think at this point, You know, I on Twitter, I saw he would be willing to move, but visa issues, right? So you got to get his visa, everything like that.
Right.
Could you expedite that process? Maybe. Could you get it done? Maybe. But is Luminosity, an org that has historically been ass, going to put in that effort and make that happen? No. Luminosity is not. They're not going to do it. They're going to write it out. Maybe not Gino, but I've heard that he doesn't want to come up to the SPL. He can't or whatever. There are circumstances that he's not going to come up. So then who do you get? Sybil?
Yeah.
I don't know that Sybil's the guy. I don't look at anyone across. You call up somebody from Sanguine. I don't think that team functions as well. I think that team functions as a unit. It's hard to say. I don't know that Luminosity can get better out of the support role. What do? You look at Azalea performing in the solo role. I don't think he is as much. They've had some success, but not enough. And I think there's just an absolute plethora of talent for solo laners right now. You've got Solo or Troll, I think is a fantastic player. Subbed in for Splice, looked great. They didn't get the wins, but he caused that team to lose. But that's only because he wasn't Divios. So, like, he didn't cause that team to lose, but he did. It's a hard line to kind of walk there. And he's, you know, proved himself in the lower levels. He looks great. I would love to see Solo or Troll get that call up. He's likable, and he's got the skill to back it up. Mando Warrior. I would love to see Mando Warrior get the call up for solo lane. He's playing ADC in the combine right now, but I think if you gave him the chance to be solo, he'd come and take it. He's kind of playing ADC out of necessity. And I think either one of those guys could come onto the Luminosity squad and be good. Now, the only other option for support, I forgot to mention this, would be Jiggs. If Jiggs wants to come back, could be great, right? But nobody wants to play with Jiggs. There's a reason why Jiggs isn't on a roster right now. Nobody wants to play with that guy. So, do you bring that into your team environment of young guys? I don't know. Like, do you see something I'm missing here with this Luminosity squad? Or are they just kind of they're in limbo because of the format of the league?
Yeah, no, they're in roster purgatory. I mean, you're right. There's a plethora of good players, but most of them can't or won't come up. And then the ones from EU, as you said, visa issues. You know, you can't. Maybe during the off season, while you know, but every single team in the SPL, I believe, gets a seed in. I believe it's top eight get a seed in MSI from the SPL teams. And top so
six, right?
Top six. Okay. I literally just had the article pulled up because I was double checking myself.
Yeah,
I think it is. Yeah. Top six. So they'll have some time in the offseason. Maybe they can try and expedite it. They just got a bunch of money because they got a merge with a different company that happened today. So maybe they have the green to throw some money at some border security folks and be like, hey, we need this sped up really, really fast to get some of those guys in there. But otherwise, you're right. There's only a couple options for the solo lane that they have. Support, although Kiki, I mean, if you look at the score lines from just the last 2 days, 052, 075, 063, look at today, 079, 087, 0812. It doesn't look good, but who else do you really have? They're stuck in purgatory, and there's nothing they can really do about but just sit, wait it out. Maybe they find somebody from the combine later on in the offseason, mm-hmm. but you just got to ride this really, really smelly wave all the way till its conclusion because you have no other options. You lost out on building your roster before the season started, and now you have to pay that price.
Yeah, it's not great. Luminosity's got to change something. They, you know, we looked at this roster at the start of the season, you know, pegged them as a bottom roster, and they've looked better than what we pegged them as. There's definitely potential there, but I just don't know how you unlock it. They're not looking as sharp as they could be, but I just don't know how you fix it, right? So PK gets the 3 over Luminosity and kind of sends Luminosity into a tailspin of who are they? What do they do How do they move on from here? And I don't know that there's any sort of answer readily available for that. And I wish that squad the best of luck in figuring that out for themselves. Our second game of that day was Dignitas and Renegades. Oh boy, what a set this was. This is one that I'd been looking forward to from the very start of the year. I just want to take a moment to revel in this because it feels like since the start of the year, I was the only one talking about Renegades being a potential powerhouse team. I put them at the very top of my, you know, power rankings list, right up there with Dig, Rival, Pittsburgh Knights. I had them in that brotherhood of the top team. I believed in them. I said, if Dart is acclimates to mid, this is a top flight team. They can take games off of anybody. I think they are just the perfect amount of chaos to find their wins. And looky, here they are. 3-2-ing Dignitas, formerly undefeated. Yes, Heroin kind of sucked a little dick in this set, but a win is a win. Dignitas definitely doesn't like this set. They're got a lot to learn, but everybody has those off days. And, you know, Heroin won 8 on the Hebo in the last game. I just don't like it. I don't like him on the Hebo. I want him on other things. Put him on the Yanis. It's a better pick for him. Not the Hebo. Give him something he can do something better with. Dignitas had an off day for sure, but Renegades showed up to play. Do you think this Renegades roster is for real?
I think so. I mean, despite what happened today, which we'll obviously get into later, I think that they can be. People have been talking about this roster. Cherio, Land God. You get this guy on a connection, it's not 400 ping, and he's great. We've seen it. The entire roster, natural synergy. I believe it was in an interview today that Deathwalker said that these guys all literally played with each other outside of their teams before, just all the time. They're hanging out with each other, so already that synergy, and they already understand the game at a high level, at least people that are running their draft. And they're so flexible with their drafts. And I think where they got Dignitas is Dignitas hasn't got a team that plays somewhat of a similar style and also can go tit for tat with them. Renegades didn't lose the early game to Kubo Fred wasn't able to take over the game early. Neither was Trix Tank with the Roams. And after that, it was all about the team fight, and just the synergy and the positioning from Renegades was better. And their picks fit perfectly what they wanted to execute. And it just played out how the draft played out pretty much at that point. And because at that point, when you're two evenly matched teams, it's all about how you drafted. Renegades got more picks that they are comfortable with than Dignitas did, I think. I think it was great discipline by them not to ban out the Hebo from Hurrywin, to let him have it 2 games in a row and say, we're just going to create compositions that can deal with this. I think the Hell pick was great for dealing with it. And just the fact they played around picking off Hurrywin in the mid lane and making him uncomfortable was just outstanding. Like, this team, for a team that only has 3 sets, you can tell, although they've only been scrimming SML teams, you can tell this team has just been putting in the work, beside whether it was playing ranked solo queue, scrimming SML teams. They came in ready despite only having such little time to turn things around, given how much they went through, the adversity they went through at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, Renegades, the way that I put this, and I'm going to be talking to Ataraxia and Emilzy this weekend, so I can try to, get their side of this, and if I have a correct assumption in view. But to me, what Renegades does really well is what Splice did really well in their run-up for Worlds, in that if they make a mistake, they minimize how much you're able to capitalize on it. They cause chaos. They run around. They delay. And they do that really well in these team fights. And Dignitas is known as being the best team fighting team in the league. But when it's all chaos, when it's all muddy, and when it's a clown fiesta, that's how you beat them. And I think Renegades is really good at extending clown fiestas. Like, this is a team of trolls. So they are used to it. They are born into it. They adapted it, whatever you want to say. They are the trolls of the SPL. They largely. Were molded by it. Yeah. They are able to make sure that even if they make a mistake, you can't punish them as severely as you can punish other teams. And I think that's a skill. And it sounds really weird to say, but that is absolutely a skill I think this Renegades roster has. And they were just able to extend the game out enough to then fight back into Dig. The biggest problem with Dig, you know, all split long, has been the early game. And I think Renegades was able to get, you know, enough going early game to get their wins. They were able to find ways to make Dignitas question themselves, question, you know, going in, and then just playing some stuff that's not, you know, everyday stuff they're going to run into. I think that's also really important in the league as the year goes on. Finding your picks, playing what you like. Nobody's playing Naja jungle. Boom, Cherry gets in league. He's playing Naja jungle. Nobody's playing that against him. Dodgy. Nobody's been playing that, right? You know, the Hun Bats, like they're playing their picks, and I like that. So Renegades looking strong. However, we cannot ignore the fact that Dignitas had a bad day. They did not look all on the same page the entire day. I don't know what it was. I think if we're going to go nuclear on this, if we're going Stephen A. Smith on this, and, you know, we got to point to one guy, we're going to point at Herouin. Herouin lost the set for Dignitas. And it sucks because Herwin's had such a great season up to this point. He was bound to have a bad one. And Hurry is that one guy. He's the linchpin for Dignitas. He doesn't have to play lights out, but he can't play like Dick. That's really, there's a large area of where he can operate. And he just did the one thing he can't do. And he played like Dick. And it's hard. And I think if we see these guys play again, I think Dignitas win this set. I think Renegades kind of get a little lucky on the Herouin end of things. I don't know. Am I giving too much credit to Herouin's bad day?
No, because that Aphrodite game, and I know the caster was saying that, oh, it's okay for Aphrodite to get two levels down. She's a heal bot anyways, but that just means he gave so much ability for Dardis to apply pressure elsewhere, not just the mid lane. I also think not just Herouin, Variety, and he did get focused a bit by Cherryo in the solo lane, but Variety just didn't have a series like we're used to watching. Variety had two games that were good, but they were both on Bologna. And once Renegade said, hey, we're going to stop giving you the Bologna, he just didn't look the same. Again, I think Cherryo was able to make sure that Cuba Fred wasn't able to influence the early game too much to allow Dig that room they need to get into that mid late game team fighting arena. Trix Tank wasn't doing so well on the early roams. And I want to point out something you said earlier, because I think it's so true. It's ridiculous in how it allows Renegades to win fights and therefore games is their escapability in fights. There are too many times when I saw Cherryo just mechanically outplay CC and make sure he lived long enough. Maybe he didn't live through the entire fight, but he lived long enough for the rotations to come through, for Nika to get there, for Dardez to show up, for Rafa to get there, and eventually Funballer to clean up fights. And without that, I think most of those fights that they had against Dignitas go south. If Nika and Cherryo didn't find ways to stay alive long enough for the team to rotate, most of those fights go south. Dignitas clean up, they have a man advantage, and they go take over neutral objectives or continue the fight and just win outright. I also think Dig's draft was a little bit, Like, I already mentioned the Hebo, but they just kept giving Nika King Arthur and the Jormungandr, and he played so well on those picks. whether it was disruption, initiation, getting to the back line, living long enough for his team to rotate, they just wouldn't take it out of his hands. And I honestly think that's where things started to fold, was in those three things. Was, like you said, Herwin, just really, really bad. The rest of the team just being off, especially Variety, which might have just been him not having Bologna, but usually he's good on almost everything he touches. And then their draft, I think they just didn't respect Renegade's picks in their draft enough to take away certain gods when it was like, okay, we just need to get this out of his hands and we play better.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think picks and drafts was bad. You look at the Kamazots pick for Variety in the last game, and it didn't do anything. Once you get in a laning phase and you're getting in more in team fights, if you're not ahead and you're not just pushing and bullying everyone, what are you really doing? It's exactly what happened. So it's hard to really, you know, justify that pick. You pick Kamazots, Erlang, Ebo, Kepri, Jingwei. Okay. Into a Yorm, Neja, AMC, Terra, Sol. On paper, you know, they just have, the Renegades just have the ability to outlast you in fights. If you're, their team fighting is better. So with the Dignitas comp, you're hoping you get a pick. You don't get that pick, what are you doing? You have single target everything. You know, Ebo is a glass cannon trying to blow up anything in front of him. And if he misses that, all of a sudden he's in the back of the fight, surrounded by bad guys, and gets blown up. That happens. All right, now he's dead. Now what do we do? Well, we've got Kamazots. What does Kamazots do? Is he going to go in? No, he's got to leave. Maybe you Kepriolt. Maybe you Kepriolt the Hebo who goes in. That's preemptive. And then they just wait for the Kepriolt to not be a thing, which, you know, theoretically could work because it's Hebo. And if you're waiting for Hebo to, like, if you're waiting like 5 seconds for Hebo to not be resurrected, he can get off, you know, his entire kit five times. That god doesn't believe in cooldown. But it just nothing worked out. I think Dignitas moved away from what made them great, which is team fighting. If they pick a team fighting comp, we will concede the early game to you because we know we're better at team fighting. We're better at the late game than you. So if you can't beat us in 15 minutes, we win. Do that. I think Dignitas moved away from that and they got punished. I think they slept on Renegades a little bit and tried to, they galaxy brained themselves. We saw Alpha Jackal do it to himself in the World's Finals where they were just trying to do too much at once and it backfires. Renegades able to be the beneficiary of that and get the win over previously undefeated team. Now, I will say, like, as much as they were the beneficiaries of Dig's bad day, I do think this is a team that is capable of beating Dignitas, even if Dig has a good day. You know, Renegades is a solid roster, and they're only going to get better as they're playing on land. That's it for our day one. Moving into day two, Luminosity Rival. More of the same. Kill Kiki. All right. Kiki's dead. Now we just get to run the map. They get really good in the early game and then can't really do anything. Mollusk is starting to get figured out. He goes to invade every chance he gets, takes the risk. And now teams are expecting that and they're shutting him down a little bit more. Thalia not looking great. Again, all these problems that we pointed out already, more exaggerated this game than the last. They get beat. Let's see. Let's look at this game. Game one. Game one is where this team has looked historically strong for LG. 32 minutes. And then 23 minutes. And then last game, 32 minutes. They get to, they extend it out again. They put Zalia on Sobek. I don't know why they haven't just done that already. Put Zalia on Zalia gods. Don't force him to play the King Arthurs. Don't force him to play the Osirises. That's not Zalia. That's not how you're going to win games. Embrace who you are. Embrace the weird. Go back to what you were doing week one. That's what Luminosity should be doing and what they should be focusing on. You got Kiki going 0-8. and almost every game. He goes 0-7, 0-8, and 0-8. And it just doesn't work. I don't want to be that horse, but rival easily. Not even, but it wasn't easy, right? You've got the early game, LG gets it, and then they kind of just extend. You rival trolled. I mean, let's just be realistic. Yeah. They trolled. They didn't respect LG, and it almost cost them. But then they reined it back in and pulled it back together. We don't really learn anything about rival here. Is the moral of the story, and I think that's a good thing from rival. But how do we analyze this game at that point?
Yeah, I'll say that they respected them a bit for game one, just because the draft was more normalized. And then beyond that, game two, I can give Kiki a pass because it seemed like the entire composition for Rival was like, hey, well, you're going to pick the Ganesh that has the spacing of the Dharmic pillars. Well, we're going to pick a comp where you throw down the pillars, then we still kill you. Basically, we have multiple options. It's either we force the pillars out of you, but still kill somebody else with a fantastic Baron Samedi pick that I actually loved. And I loved the way he built it, too. Also, Panda Cat on this Medusa, I liked it. I liked the way he built that. Or basically, they built this to force out either Joshi or Kiki Sochiki's ultimates. And then once they force one or the other out, they just pick a target. And most of the times, Joshi was good enough to be able to hold his ultimate and not get caught. But Kiki, not so much. And then game five was just, our game three was an absolute troll. And that's the only reason I think the game went to 32 minutes. Also because Rival, while they trolled with their picks, I think they still made map rotations. They still played it safe. There are times when they could have, there's one time I remember where they could have tried to end the game and said they peeled off, went to FG and took that and restarted. But you got Fine OK on Artemis, Captain Twig on the Achilles jungle, and they were like, hey, we're just gonna pick wherever we want and beat you. And you mentioned Zalia not picking King Arthur and Osiris, and the sad thing is I want to say yes, they tried to go back to that, but it's only because it was banned out. I feel like if it wasn't banned, they would have probably tried to pick one of the two, and the problem would have still persisted. I don't know, man.
They had the success on the Yorm to start the year, and then now they've kind of moved away from that, and I think they need to go back to the Yorm. Yorm is a Zalia pick through and through. You know, I just don't get moving away from that at this stage. They need to stay true to who they are. But I guess they don't know who they are. I mean, they're making a change with Joshi and Oceans, kind of figuring out if that's what's going to take it. I don't think so. I think we've kind of fully broken down that there's more stuff that needs to come from this LG. But they still find their way to look good in places. And I feel bad. I feel bad for Mollusk. Mollusk has looked really good out there. And Joshi and Oceans have looked decent as well. You know, if I can't say that this whole team needs to go, I think Mollusk can stay. And if I'm overreacting, get rid of Oceans, pull up SML or a combine ADC, give them a shot. If I'm overreacting, get Meerkat, bring him up for mid, you know, do something along those lines, get, explore your options, but I don't think you can with the squad just yet. It's hard. I really feel for this Luminosity squad. I like the guys. They've got heart. They just don't have skill, and it really sucks. obviously, they have skill. Yeah, that's obviously these guys have skill. I don't want, you know, love you guys. moving on away from that, next game of the day, last game of the week, Pittsburgh Knights versus Renegades. I've got to eat some crow. I walked in after Renegades, you know, 3-2 dig. I didn't pay as much attention as I should have to that game. You know, looking back, Dig had an off day, especially with a hurry. I was like, okay, Renegades are for real. If they can beat Dig, they can definitely beat PK. I put out a power rankings where I put Renegades as the third best team over Splice, over PK, and I had PK at the bottom of the top. I take it back. P- PK has found themselves. They've looked good. They still, my biggest criticism of this Pittsburgh Knight roster has been adapting. Adapting has lost all patience. And his hallmark for to me always felt like he forced other junglers to be impatient. He would get ahead and then force you to play out of position to try to make plays. Now more and more we're seeing adapting start to get impatient himself, be too aggressive, and it's cost them some wins. Today, you know, I think it was what, game two. You know, it looks like Rivals gonna pull it. It looks like Renegades are gonna pull it out. They're gonna win the game, and then adapting blinks and they kill everybody and they kill the Titan. It's like, what the hell just happened? And like, I guess F Dot had talked to him. He's like, you know, I just fucking blinked. I mean, did you tell your team? No, I just blinked. I was like, all right, well, cool. I guess this is what you got to do. You know, like that's the kind of 50-50 thing that hasn't gone their way. And it still worries me. I still worry about adapting's ability to play at the highest level this year because of him losing that patience. And I think that's a very critical piece. But I think Renegades, all of these games, all of these playing has finally caught up to them a little bit. They're starting to slow down. They're not hot shit. They're not, you know, the enigma coming in. Everyone kind of knows what they're going to be doing, what they're going to be playing. And they're able to be stifled. This was the best PK set we've seen so far. This makes me a believer in PK. Game one, 23 minutes, handily beat Renegades. Renegades couldn't get anything going. They didn't. Their comp felt weird. I didn't like it. They fun ball on the neath pick, which you forecasted earlier. And just not something you want to see. Everybody just kind of doesn't know what to do, and it's all gross. Game two, a lot better from them. They almost win and don't. You got to feel bad about that, but good stuff to watch for positioning, everything like that. And then, you know, game three, 47 minutes in, but PK felt like they were in the driver's seat the whole time. There was a couple hiccups at the end where, you know, PK dropped the ball and Renegades were put back into the game, but PK able to, you know, snuff it out, put them back down. And I think that was really important. This is we're here. This is our potential. Don't sleep on us. We are capable of being the best team in the league. And Renegades, I don't know if they were just tired, they were playing off picks. You know, Dart is on the raw. You could have played anything else. You know, you pick it to synergize with the Neja. Scylla exists. I think that would have been the far superior pick in that situation. But I don't know. They've got a lot of time. They're qualifying for midseason, right? So what's the point of going all out every time out playing the same stuff? Experiment a little bit. See what actually works. You know, flesh out your meta. You haven't had the time to do the same as these other teams. So I don't know. I'll ask you the same question I asked you in the last set with Renegades. Is Renegades for real, or were they a flash in the pan?
I think they're for real. I think that this set highlighted some of their issues coming in. You're right. This didn't tell us anything about Pittsburgh. It told us more about what's going on with Renegades being that team that's only three, now four sets in. And when you're a team that, even though you've been scrimming, you don't have any real SPL competitive experience yet, I think you conform yourself to a set meta. And therefore, if they didn't get certain picks, they didn't perform well. You saw every game, Pittsburgh Knights had this same bands, AMC, Yorm, Uller, Hunbats, and they always stole away the soul from Funballer. And they forced Renegades to be uncomfortable with how they played, not only in the game, but just through draft. And I think that the draft is what really – game one's draft, Funballer, I think they just got caught maybe a little bit with big heads because they just beat Dig, and they're like, oh, we can beat Dig, we can beat Pittsburgh Knights, so we'll pick up the knee. It's whatever. And they got beat. And it's like, okay, well, now we got to go to something else. But by this time, again – They're banning away our priority picks. They're giving us that comfort. They're allowing Nika to survive in fights and get out and escape and give him that time. Cherryo not having the impact he had in fights. It also highlighted just within those team fights how they operate. And again, on short time and short notice, it's hard to break out of this mold until you have some extra time to start scrimming SPL teams. Maybe once MSI is over and in the break between phase one and phase two, they can do this. But it's basically Cherryo being really telegraphed where if he can't find a way in with a sash or find a way in with on the with a stun on the Kali that he played the first game, then Nika's probably not going to follow up. The team won't follow up. So they live and die through the Nika and Cherryo engage, whether it's by stalling once they engage or just engaging outright and allowing Raffer, Funballer, and Dardas to follow up. And if they can't find that, then we just really can't operate as a team. And they still, as we pointed out before, were able to take advantage of some of the mistakes, the very few mistakes that the Knights made in previous games. And that's why the games went as long as they did, the 37-minute and 47-minute. But besides that, it just was really easy to see what is wrong with this squad coming in on the short amount of time they've had, because everything was telegraphed. And when your draft gets messed with, and when your in-game macro strategy gets messed with, you can't operate the same. And game two, adapting, as you said, it looked like it was going to go Renegade's way. It was the one time where, despite them being a little bit inflexible, it looked like they were going to take the win. And then adapting does adapting things, and the rest of his team follows up, and they take the W. The next game, Deathwalker doesn't have the best game against Nika, but neither does Nika. And Cherryo Nika, 1-4, 1-3. Pretty much the story of the series was where Nika and Cherryo go, it seems the rest of the team follows. And that's all she wrote for the 3-0 set. And in the future, they're going to have to find more diverse ways to play, be more flexible. We know they have flexible god pools, right? They can do a lot of different stuff. If you're not afraid to pull out Ra and Neith, we know you can do more flexible things. Now you just have to find a more flexible play style to play through so that teams can't just read you off of two or three sets and you become a one-trick pony.
Yeah, I think both those picks, the Neith and the Ra, not the strongest, greatest picks. I mean, Dardas had some snipes on the Ra, one ball on the Neith. I really don't get it. You want to push the early game, you don't get the Fafnir to pair it with those two ADCs and everything. I don't know. It's... It's hard to say which is more likely, that around the battleground, that Renegades Galaxy Brain themselves, or that they were just outplayed entirely. It's hard to figure out which one of those was the case. I want to say that Renegade stuck around. They played very well. They had their moments. I'm going full Roboto, apparently. let me try something real quick. Sorry for everybody watching. Sorry for the VOD. Gotta take a second here.
Momentary pause.
Yeah, momentary pause. Sorry, but it's sometimes you just get a little bug.
Hey, man. It's technology. This is where commercial breaks would come in handy. If, want to throw us that great ad money, just like. Now. Can't hear at all. So it's just me.
There? Are we good?
There we go. It's not just me. I was about you saved it in the nick time. I was about to go into a nice little diatribe about cowboy hats and their merit in America.
All right, we got it. All right, cool. All right, so like I was saying, I don't know whether it was PK just outplaying the ever-loving shit out of Renegades, or if it was Renegades just kind of picking themselves out of the contest, right? It's hard for me to really place that. I think game two, game three, game two was what really looked like it should have been theirs. game three, I never really felt that PK was threatened early or mid. There were spots late game that the Renegades threatened to come back into the game by getting, you know, some good kills and getting some momentum going, but they don't finish, they don't close it out. I don't know. I'm intrigued by this Renegade squad. I do also think that they are for real. I think that they have a lot of potential and ability, and especially as this is going on longer. I can't wait to watch them as they continue. But PK, I think by and large, this was their statement game. I really liked what I saw. They're figuring themselves out. They showed a lot of resiliency. That is also a thing that they haven't shown as much going into the day, was the resiliency. Yes, they, you know, they go and they win game one. They get 1-0, they get 2-0, and then they get 3-0. But, you know, going in, like, it wasn't easy. Outside of game one, that was the only easy game for them. You know, Renegades isn't dead yet. They're not a bad team. They're not a flash in the pan. But PK has finally stepped up and stepped into, you know, the roster that we expected them to be. I feel like I've been one of their harshest critics, and I feel like I have to hype them up when they do something like this. I need to, you know, overcorrect on the other side and be like, okay, you guys did it. I'm impressed. I love what I saw. And so that's kind of why I'm going a little bit overboard here. But PK doesn't have to play Dig, doesn't have to play Rival. The only team that they got to play in the season is going to be Splice. And if Splice shows up like the team they were the day after they made their roster swaps, PK's going to 3-0 them. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. And that's going to be a lot of momentum going in MSI. If that happens, we could see PK make a damned good run for winning MSI. And that is not something I thought I'd say at the start or last week. You know, PK, even yesterday, I've been very critical of this Knights team. And now if they can keep today's level of play up, they are now in contention for the championship. And that's on the record for me. I'm giving the boys their due.
They're in contention. I agree. This was kind of an eye-opener because I also was just sort of on the, well, PK is great. I felt like if they face a team like Dig that can come in prepared, then just the individual star power on PK just wouldn't be enough. So, like, teams like Rival, Dig, even United could probably just through sheer preparation for them. But I think the Knights embraced, as you said, adapting. If he's going to be the guy going in without telling team, just being impatient, if this is your star racehorse that's leading your pack, why not just equip him with the tools to go ahead and run that race and win first place? They gave him three picks three times in a row where he could literally, through sheer aggression and doing almost whatever he wanted to, take over a game and be that guy. In game two, it worked out for them. Game one, he played well. Game three, it worked. So why not keep going with this? You know you're good in every other lane and every other role, to where you can compensate for that. Against the Dignitas, that might not work out so much, but if you can still run your draft, your pick and ban as well as they did this series to give yourself a better chance, then I can see them taking a 3-2 set over Dig and over Rival. They just have to keep this up and don't change from this plan, because by all intents and purposes, I thought it was going to be at least a 3-2 for Renegades based off how they played against Dignitas and how they've been playing. And PK said, we're going to find our style, embrace it. And I hope they run with it through MSI and make MSI interesting. I want all these top six teams, at least the top four, to be close and make things interesting so we don't get a steamrolled MSI. And it's just, especially for the first one, just get like a steamrolled MSI and just be like, oh, well, you know, Dig took it. It was really quick. They had no competition. I want there to be some parity. And this is exactly what needs to happen to get there. A little bit of variety. You know, everyone figure out how they want to play the game and sticking true to that and not trying to conform to some overall meta, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited. You know, the more competition we get, the better. And so seeing PK finally deliver is a very good thing. That's it for our talk for the SPL today. That's the last game. Some changes, a little bit of housekeeping. Obviously, today we had to move to Friday because Culture got held up yesterday. You know, it was hard to keep that time slot. So today it worked out to come. But moving forward, this will be our second change, our third time slot overall for UGC. We're going to be moving to Wednesdays at about, I believe, 6 p.m. Eastern. So that's 5 Central. I think that's what we're going to move on. Pay attention to Twitter. You know, obviously, I'll be posting this to Smite Pro subreddit. I'll let the Discord know there, and Twitter. We'll let you guys know what's going on with the show. Interviews will be returning next week. Not sure how that will work out. I never know how long the interviews are going to go. I've got Barra lined up. Last time we talked to him was like what, 2-3 hours. So who knows how long that one will go. And so with that, we might move away from doing full interviews on the show. Well, we might do snippets and then, cut back to the live show and have, that be a separate thing on the YouTube channel and everything like that. So we'll explore, see what happens. You know, we want to keep this to a tight show. You know, hour and a half is really that sweet point. You know, today we hit about an hour, so we're good there. But if I have another hour long interview, we're in trouble. So we got, other shows are kind of after us and everything. So we want to be respectful for that. So I'll let you guys know what happens there. And then, we'll try to move Culture into doing some of his own interviews, or we'll do some joint interviews, let him get, his sea legs, and then we'll, send him off into the world to do his own thing. So keep an eye on all of that. I'm really excited. We're going to, as Culture gets, acclimated here, we're going to be able to do a lot more. Our growth is going to be better here. There's only so much I can do on my own, so I'm thankful to have him here. It makes it easier to talk about Smite and everything when you have somebody to bounce stuff off of. So if you're not following him, go give him a follow and follow his he's got some YouTube content. He does Culture's Corner. I watched it the other day. It wasn't great. It wasn't bad though.
For the record, I did the first one. I think first one was through Movie Maker. The second one was through DaVinci Resolve. I'm trying to learn new editing softwares. I'm taking top by Geek Squad because for whatever reason it can't run the Adobe Suite, but it's an i7 processor, so I don't know what's going on there. So going to fix that so that it's better content. But I do have an audio podcast as well, where you can catch that on pretty much any and all of your favorite listening apps. Culture's Corner is the same name, and I just do interviews with, right now it's just people that I know in the space. They're on my level. Other casters, other esports enthusiasts and analysts, but hoping to get some bigger names, bigger people on there in the future. So we're on. I just released episode 5 the other day. I have 2 more episodes before the official episodes start. So I have like 7-8 in total, but I'm going to stop sitting here with the shameless plugs. Go follow me at ATL Esports Guy on Twitter. And I'm done.
All right. So a lot of follow. We'll try. I keep saying it. We're going to get this show onto, a podcast version. We're going to get an audio version up for you guys. We just got to sit down and actually do it. And it shouldn't be too hard to like rip all the audio and put everything, backlog it. And then that'll be another way too, to put those interviews in their full form out on, those audio only things. That makes it easier for us. So keep an eye out on there. I promise it's coming. So thanks everybody for watching. It's been great. I can't wait. Next week, don't forget Wednesday, our new day. I want to see a lot of people there. We'll give away some skins there live. I'll put that out on Twitter. I really want next week to be a big week for us. So we're gonna do a lot of shameless promotion and everything like that for next week. We got to get our numbers up, and I want you all to be there. make the show as good as it can be. So that's it for us. We'll see you next time around the battleground. Goodbye, everybody.